The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Now, weeks before Petito died, a 911 caller said he saw a man who was traveling in a white van with Florida license plates allegedly hit a woman in Utah. Petito and her fiancé, Brian Laundrie, were traveling in a van that matches that description. Laundrie, though, is not charged with any crimes at this time, but investigators are calling him a person of interest in this case. Petito's story has started a conversation nationwide about domestic violence. An analysis by the Violence Policy Center found 92% of women murdered in 2018 were killed by men they knew.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, what a tragic stat that is. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Drew Mariani. Good to be with you today. That was from CBS News, talking a little bit about the Gabby Petito story. I want to talk about it coming up a little bit later. In light of what we're seeing, we'll discuss domestic violence. If you are currently in a situation that you want to get out of, there is help. If you have somebody you love who doesn't recognize that they're in a situation like that, you may want to stay tuned, because coming up in a few moments, we'll dive into that. All right, I'll give you a perspective on it. Many experts are saying, it's very easy to look back in retrospect and say, the police should have done X, Y, and Z. But a lot of experts, especially those who are familiar with domestic abuse, said, you know what? Police missed this one. If they would have arrested one of the two, if they would have separated them, Gabby Petito might be alive today. That's hard to say. Again, we don't know all the details. We don't know where Laundrie is, and they've never really disclosed how she was murdered. And of course, they're probably keeping that close for a reason. But we can dive into that. We'll look at it. You're welcome to join me anytime too. Feel free to dial in right now, 888-914-9149. If you have somebody who you think should hear this segment, get them plugged in. They can listen online at relevantradio.com. They can use the mobile app or the station you're listening to. And, of course, we'll pray the chaplet coming up in an hour. So be sure and join me for that and a whole lot more. Let me bring you up to speed just on a couple little stories that have come across my radar. You know, I like to keep you in the know. Energy sources, the shortages, right? We see gas prices going up. There's talk about a carbon tax. I mentioned that yesterday and what that would mean to the future of our country and to your bottom line. But there are energy shortages not only happening here, but in a couple key places around the world. In the UK, they're short on gasoline, or petrol, as they call it, right? The Hill was reporting that gas stations around the island nation, they're running short of gas, not because of short supply, but because there are not enough drivers to get to the gas station. So the government is doing something very unique. Check this story out from ABC News.
Across the country, many stations are simply shut, with no supplies left to sell. The crisis is being blamed on two things: panic buying and a shortage of delivery drivers. Some say that's a symptom of Brexit.
This is a complete lack of planning. No, we exited the EU. One consequence was there was going to be a shortage of HGV drivers. That was predictable. It was predicted.
The government is now offering 5,000 temporary visas to foreign truck drivers after weeks of supply issues across food and retail industries.
It's a temporary visa. It's only 3 months, so not sure how attractive that's going to be to the average person abroad to come in.
In the meantime, the government is turning to the military for help. Army tanker drivers could be delivering fuel within days.
Right now in West London, there's no signs of those queues easing up, but still there's hope that by the end of the week, these supply issues will have improved.
We're hearing from industry that supplies are coming back onto the forecourts in the normal way. And I would just urge everybody to go about their business in the normal way.
If there's one message the Prime Minister is keen to get across to motorists, it's don't panic. Isabella Higgins, ABC News, London.
There's a look across the pond, as they like to say, at what's happening. And it's not just England. It's also China. I just want to give you a kind of an international look at this. China's short on energy, believe it or not. They're short of electricity is what it comes down to. They allegedly made it through the pandemic fine. That's what they were saying, right? Oh, no problem here. But as the rest of the world's economy starts, you know, to wake up, that's putting demand now on Chinese goods. Everything's made so cheaply there, they're considered the world's factory, right? So there's an increase in demand right now for aluminum, for steel, for cement, which are all energy-intensive products. And they've been, you know, leading to brownouts, even blackouts, especially for the residential customers there. So this could make things very difficult for you. And you're saying, how's it going to make it difficult for me if they're having blackouts and brownouts in China, right? Well, they are the world's factory. Christmas is just a couple months away now, right? Can you believe that? A lot of people like to do their shopping earlier. There are big delays in shipping containers. I know certain companies, Costco, I heard, is actually renting their own ships, their own container ships, to get products moved. So they have product. But there are experts right now saying that, you know, Christmas shopping this season, there might be fewer goods on the shelves, and it might take you a lot longer to get what you want. So if you are a last-minute, I'm-going-to-shop-on-Christmas-Eve type of guy, maybe a gift card this year, right? Maybe some good old cash, some cheddar. You know, I don't know. My advice to you is start early, you know. Start early if that's important, and if gifts are a big part of your Christmas exchange. So, well, we'll see. Yeah, a few weeks ago, the president announced that private business, private businesses, I should say probably plural, with more than 100 employees are going to need to put vaccine mandates in place. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when the news broke. And of course, normally, a president can't really do that. But President Biden claimed he could. He claimed he could do it through the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And you know what that is, right? We all, if you work in any corporation, you work anywhere, you know what OSHA is. So far, those regulations have not come out yet, but there's no indication of when they will come out. But there is a provision in this $3.5 trillion reconciliation budget bill that says that any business that doesn't comply, now listen to this, if you're a small business or you're a business in general, maybe you have a business of 100 employees or more, right? Maybe you're medium-sized or even larger. If you do not comply, you can be fined anywhere from, here's the bottom number, $70,000. To $700,000. That's a provision in this $3.5 trillion reconciliation budget bill, in which Capitol Hill right now is in a battle over between the, it's within the Democratic Party right now. Progressives and moderates are going over, going at it right now. Well, I don't know if we're going to see much traction there. Neither wants to give ground. The Biden mandate said that they could be fined $14,000. Remember when he first came out and said, if you don't vaccinate, you're going to be fined $14,000? This bill, just to give you some perspective on it, it would drastically increase that fine. It would, it would be a fine for each infraction, too, by the way. So you start doing the math. How many employees, times 70,000 or 700,000 could be a killer. But that bill, I think, is a trouble. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, one of the two Democrat holdouts on it, said yesterday he's not going to vote for it on two different grounds. But let me just share with you what he said to reporters as he was making his way out of the Capitol.
He said that they need by tomorrow legislative language agreed to. That means
that won't happen.
Yeah. Why is that?
No, we haven't been negotiating yet in a good faith. No one's been negotiating along those lines with the other party to see what would be acceptable.
So
all we need to do is pass the bipartisan infrastructure bill, sit down and start negotiating in good faith. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Senator, progressives feel though you're not dealing in good faith. They felt that there was a deal made before.
I never knew about that. Never heard.
So were never part of a deal that linked the two bills together.
About two of them are going to be together.
Yeah.
Why do you think we work so hard to separate it?
Is it possible?
Is it possible?
No, it's not possible.
To get a framework by tomorrow.
No, it's not possible.
Not possible to get any framework.
Any timeline on a framework.
It's what's possible is sit down and have good frank negotiations.
I love that. That's Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia. And as he's talking, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, so often politics divides us, doesn't it? We become partisan. We think the other side's crazy. Let's pray. Let's pray and fast. I had a conversation earlier today with our chief programming officer, our chief executive officer, some others here at the network. And we were just discussing, the campaign that Archbishop Cordiglione had for Nancy Pelosi, calling for prayer for her, for prayer and fasting, the rosary in particular for her, and the Rose campaign for her. And I got an email earlier today from their office. They received over 1,000 responses of roses. They were trying to get 1,000 roses to give to Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi will have 1,000 roses coming her way. And I'm sure it's going to be far over that. But I love the idea of praying and fasting. Whether you agree with Joe Manchin or you disagree with them, whether you agree with Nancy Pelosi or you don't, whether it's the president or whoever it may be, what changes the country? It is not the rhetoric, you know, it's not the anger, it's not the vitriol. What it ultimately is our own prayer and sacrifice. I shared with you the other day how St. Faustina would take on suffering. She would offer reparation and do penance for her spiritual director, Father Sapochko. What a beautiful idea to pray and to sacrifice for our leaders. You know, whether you agree with them or not, you might like Joe Manchin's position, and you might say, bravo, a little bit of sanity there, or you may not. Let's pray that the Holy Spirit illuminates their minds and convicts their hearts, that we have a better country as a result of it. I think it's great. And I want to say, a lot of people were emailing me, what's the email address for Archbishop Cordiglione and the prayer campaign for Nancy Pelosi? It was benedictinstitute.org. That's what they threw out, benedictinstitute.org. But back to Joe Manchin, just as a side note here. Here's what he said. You know, he's one of two holdouts, and I'm sure they're throwing everything at him right now to try to get him to come on board. And he's a man, I think, who holds his ground, and he says he's not going to vote for it on two different grounds. First, he called it fiscal insanity, right? And I love that. I think what an appropriate use of words, right? You know how I love words. Fiscal insanity. It is. I would say it was crazy, right? It's fiscal insanity. He says it's way too much money, especially when we're having trouble paying for what? Social Security and Medicare. Plus, he says it would be inflationary. And we are already having conversations about, you know, inflation coming our way. We're beginning to see it, but it may even ramp up in terms of bigger numbers. And that's going to hit normal people with what he called an inflationary tax. You know, the middle class is not going to be taxed. You know, no one making less than this is going to be taxed. Well, there's such a thing called an inflationary tax. And the second thing he said, too, which I think was even more compelling, he said that if this bill, you know, no matter how much money's in it, if this bill doesn't come with a Hyde Amendment in it, it's dead on arrival. And can I just say bravo to you? Bravo. The Hyde Amendment, of course, if you're not familiar with that, it forbids federal money from being spent on most abortions. And that is a man of character. Say a prayer. Say a prayer for all those who govern. Say a prayer for all those who are going to make these decisions. And definitely, let's say a prayer for the unborn. I think that is so important, so important. Coming up in a minute, there's another story I saw about possibly changing the American flag. I'll get to that in a minute, but I do want to change gears and talk to you about something else. I want to talk to you about what we're seeing. Let me share it with you. I'll share this story with you, and then we'll talk a little bit about Gabby Petito. One final story here before I move on, just in terms of our country. I don't know a whole lot about this. I could probably do an hour just on the history of our flag and just the beauty of what it represents. You know, the New York Times seems to have something against it, though. I don't understand certain institutions, certain people. And again, you'll be hearing me say it a million times to you, so please don't get upset with it. We really need to fill those positions of political office, of the entertainment industry, of places where we are journalists, where medical communities, with well-formed individuals, people who have good hearts and well-formed minds and consciences. Earlier this year, one of the editorial board members wrote how she was disturbed to see the American flag on dozens of trucks during a trip that she took to Long Island. Why would that upset you? This is the greatest nation on the planet, right? This is a nation that upholds freedoms, that is the most generous nation on the world, that has advanced modern civilization more than any other nation ever has. We're the home of the free, land of the brave, right? We are a nation that should believe that every human being has an inalienable right to life, to liberty, and to the pursuit of happiness. And that's what our flag represents. I don't really like seeing a flag, you know. It's a sign of division. Flag's a sign of non-unity. It's not of unity. What country are you from? I say, you don't like this country? Then go somewhere else. and worship of that flag, right? I mean, it's silly. You know, they went on and they asked six graphic designers to come up with a new design for the flag. So, and I saw these. Most of them were really ugly, to be honest with you. I'd never see that as the American flag. There's no reason for it. No one was asking them to redesign the American flag, but they're pushing an agenda. It's really what it's all part. It's part of this narrative that we have in the country. So let's just say that the reception hasn't exactly been warm. So, you know, these left-wing writers on Twitter are saying things that this was completely unnecessary. You know, all the designs are terrible. They're completely terrible. So good. There's a little sanity out there. I mean, I love our country, and I love the flag that it represents. And maybe that topic deserves more discussion. Maybe I'll give you a little history on our great nation. Many of you men and women who served in the military, you know how proud you are of the American flag and what it represents. You know how much blood has been spilt defending the freedoms of this great nation and all that what we have here. Coming up in just a moment, Cristoria Wayland is going to be joining me, or Welland, I should say, is going to be stopping by. And I want to talk about a story that has captivated the country. Gabby Petito, right? I know you've seen this. And I was saying to my wife the other day, what is it about this story that has people so captivated? We're seeing this division, too. People say, oh, it's a white girl story. It's, you know, it's a missing white girl story. I don't necessarily buy that. You know what makes this story just a little bit different? I think the fact that this girl was all over social media, she was young, she was in this relationship, and her boyfriend comes back without her, driving her car and using her ATM card. People are thinking, what the heck is up with that? And he's not talking. If he came back, and even if he lied, oh, I don't know what happened to her. Oh, we got to search for her. This guy's AWOL. He's disappeared, right? He's a ghost. People want to know what's going on. They're passionate about it. I think that's part of what has really captivated the country. 22 years old, if you're not familiar with the story for some reason, she went out from Long Island for this cross-country van drive with her fiancé, Brian Laundrie. If I understand correctly, I mean, she dated him since high school, I think. And on August 22nd, a couple weeks into the drive, they were documenting on their YouTube and their Instagram accounts, you know, their journey. And she wanted to, I guess, to be a YouTube star or an internet star. Somebody called the police in Utah on her, in Moab. And they were called to deal with a couple in front of a natural food co-op who were having a fight. Somebody saw, you know, this dispute. It turned out to be Petito and Laundrie. So the police broke up the fight, determined that what needed to be done was just a mental and emotional health break from being cooped up in the van together for so long, put them in separate hotels for the night. Or I think Gabby stayed in the van and he stayed in a hotel. Normally in a situation like that, in domestic violence, normally somebody's arrested, right? One of the two, the aggressor, is ultimately taken away. A few days later, Petito's mother was no longer hearing from her daughter, so she filed this missing person report, and then all of a sudden her boyfriend shows up at home without her, driving her car. And people are saying, what's up? Well, the police come to talk, they lawyer up, you know, the attorney represents him. And I'm thinking, wow, in some respects, I think, okay, well, maybe he had nothing to do with it, but he wants to protect himself, and, you know, there's nothing illegal about what he's doing, but boy, the optics of it were terribly terrible. And all of a sudden he disappears, and guess what? Her body was found on September 19th. Homicidal murder. Homicidal death. So they didn't disclose the type of death, but we do know she was murdered. So this has brought the issue of domestic abuse back to the front and center. A lot of questions have been raised about whether or not the police who were called to the scene did the right thing in not calling what they saw was domestic violence. A lot of experts who saw this case, they're all saying, oh, man, a lot of people who are experts in domestic violence, they said, no, there were signs there. There should have been something more done. If it was, Gabby may be alive today. I don't know. I'm not walking in the officer's shoes. Maybe they thought this would be enough. Should they have had a different response? Should they have? Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about domestic abuse. What are the signs? What if your daughter was in that situation? Would you be able to recognize the signs, and would she know to be able to get out? Maybe you're in that situation right now. The stats are pretty stunning. And I'll give you one quick number here. According to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, on average, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner here in our country. Count it. Look at your watch. In this next 60 seconds, 20 people will be abused by an intimate partner in this country. That's stat from the National Coalition against domestic violence. A lot of those stats. Stunning. During 1 year, just to give you a big picture of what that means, it might be hard. Well, it's 20. Over the course of a year, that equates to more than 10 million men and women at the hands of domestic abuse. One in four women, one in nine men. I mean, most people think it's women. The majority are one in four. But one in nine men experience severe intimate partner physical violence, intimate partner contact, sexual violence, intimate partner stalking with impacts such as injury and post-traumatic stress disorder and the use of victim services. You know, so there's so much that goes on here, all kinds of problems. I can give you a litany of them. But one in four women, one in seven men have been victims of severe violence by an intimate partner in their lifetime. And I'm going to get you a telephone number if you're going through this. I hope you will stay with us because there is help out there for you. There really is. In fact, when I come back, let's take some of your calls. Love to hear from you. And as I said, we'll be joined by Christoria Welland, and we'll take a look at the signs. So you'll know, maybe you can help that loved one that might be in this situation. And if you're going through this right now, you know, there is a door. There is a way out, all right? We'll show you and hopefully lead you through it. Okay, grab a pen and paper, too. We'll get you up to speed on some really important contact information that you can get into the hands of that person that you love. More right after this. Stay with me.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, hey, thanks for joining me. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. If you're just joining me right now, just taking a look at some of the continuing conversation from a story that has captivated the nation. That's the story of Gabby Petito, of course, a tragic story. She lost her life. No murderer has been identified yet, but you know, if you're going to jump to a conclusion, it would look like Brian Laundrie, who was her boyfriend, who was with her and returned home with her vehicle, and not her, and has gone missing, is what the police are calling a person of interest. Not saying he did it, but he seems like a person of interest. You would hope that he would talk about what happened, when he last saw her, where she was, all of those types of things. But the police did have an interaction with Gabby and with Brian before she went missing and ultimately ended up, was discovered dead. And has begun a conversation about social media, about domestic violence, about so many different things. And I thought today, what an appropriate time for you and I to talk a little bit about domestic violence. Yeah, I was sharing some stats. You know, one in four women, one in seven men have been victims of severe physical violence by an intimate partner in their lifetime. And there's all forms of violence, physical violence, sexual violence, so many different things. And it's not limited to those families without God in their lives. It happens to Catholic families. It happens to strong families. Nobody is immune. I've invited to join us today. Take a look at this. And I'll grab your calls in a quick second. If you're on hold, stay with me. I'll get you on the air. And I'd love to hear your story, too. Feel free to call in, or if you're in a troubling situation, we'd love to talk with you as well. I've asked Dr. Christoria Welland to stop by. She is a Catholic psychologist who's counseled survivors of domestic abuse for about 40 years and has worked with those who initiate the harm. For 25 years. And at the request of the Vatican, she wrote a book. So jot this down. This might help you. How to Help End Violence in Catholic Families. That's the name of her book, How to Help End Violence in Catholic Families. And among other things, she's created both an English and Spanish online course. And just there's some great resources. So check it out. She's a fellow also with Catholics for Family Peace. And you can check them out at CatholicFamilyPeace.org. But we want to get you plugged into some resources. Before we go any further, if you are a victim right now, if you are in a situation where there is abuse and you do not know what to do and you have no one to talk to, grab a pen and paper. We're going to get you plugged in. And, Doctor, let me bring you into the conversation here. You and I were talking. First of all, it's good to have you with me today. Thank you for being here.
I really appreciate it, Drew. Thank you for inviting me.
You and I were just talking, you know, off air before we came back from this break, and I was saying to you, hey, what's a really good resource? You mentioned the hotline.org. Why don't you share, before we talk about anything else, about the resources somebody can tap into if they find themselves or they have somebody that they know that might be in an abusive relationship?
Yeah, obviously, since we don't have that much time, I'd like to share just this one resource, thehotline.org. They also have a hotline number, and I'll give you that number. That's 800-799-SAFE, SAFE, so 799-SAFE. And thehotline.org also has a Spanish component, so there's English and Spanish. You can toggle between the two websites. They have 200 different languages available with their operators, so it's really a resource that would be the first line of reference for you. Obviously, there's tons of local organizations, but I would always mention the hotline first because it's very comprehensive, and they know how to hook people up to local resources, and so that's a great place to start.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And I'd like to be able to mention some of the Catholic resources that are out there, but I guess we'll do that later. Would that be a better
time
to do that?
Whenever you want. The platform is yours. If you want to do it now or you want to give people a little bit of time, they can certainly do that as well.
This might be a good time to reference it since people already have their
phones
in their hands. And, you know, you're welcome to go to my website. It's paxinfamilia.org, and that's Latin, paxinfamilia.org. And my books are available there in English and Spanish and some other languages as well. And so there's the book that you just referenced, How Can We Help to End Violence in Catholic Families, which is like a summary, kind of a summary book of all the different things that come together to help Catholics to understand that domestic violence is not something we should expect in a relationship, and it goes against the will of God and His plan for marriage. The second book that's also available there is called Journeying Through Life with Jesus, the Son of God.
Yeah.
And that's a life skill program for young people and Catholic couples. And I wrote that so that people would have a reference point to how to regulate themselves, how to prevent violence, and also to incorporate their faith and scriptures and their journey with Jesus into that journey of violence prevention. So that is also available in English and Spanish on the website, no charge. I also wanted to mention Catholics for Family Peace, .org. Which is an organization which I belong to. I'm a fellow of the organization. Also, the Archdiocese of Chicago has an excellent website their main website called Domestic Violence Outreach. A lot of information there. There's a lot of videos. There is the Archdiocese of Washington, which has the Catholic Charities, has a website that is devoted to domestic violence, and there's a very good workbook there called Listen with Love. So there's a lot of resources that were not out there, let's say, five years ago.
That's great.
I think.
What does that speak to, Doctor? Does it speak to an increase in domestic violence? Are we seeing more of it today? Or?
No.
No?
There was an increase during the pandemic. You know, we haven't yet got those stats. It takes a while for stats to come out. But I mean, generally speaking, throughout the world, I think the consensus is there was an increase in domestic violence during the pandemic, especially during the lockdowns, which, of course, makes perfect sense. If you're locked up with someone, you can't leave your house and you can't get other resources, then that's going to increase the risk. And, of course, just the increase in stress and drinking and all of those things. But during the pandemic, there was an increase in domestic violence, but really it's not like domestic violence has increased specifically during the last 5 or 10 years. It's that there's more awareness. On the part of the USCCB. There's more awareness on the part of the Vatican. We hear Pope Francis talk about it quite frequently.
Yeah.
In fact, the USCCB has named, as you already know, October is the month that we dedicate to Respect Life. And they're also calling it the Domestic Violence Awareness Month because, you know, that's also the life of a woman or of a man in this case. Yeah. And so it's really important for us to be aware that life throughout the spectrum from birth to natural death is sacred, and we need to protect each other and to really respect each other.
I agree.
So that's just kind of my blurb on what's available for Catholics. There's lots more. There's Christian websites that have a lot of resources.
You've given plenty. You're going to overload people with it. If they go to your website, thehotline.org, I'm sure there's other resources there, too, that they can find on that site. So thehotline.org, if you don't have a pen or paper. We're going to grab a few calls in a second. If you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. But, you know, let's begin with some of the basics. This story of Gabby Petito, looks like she's in love with her boyfriend, high school, you know, boyfriend. They're traveling across the country. They're living in a van. I'm sure that exacerbated the relationship. When you're around somebody in a small space like that, that probably is not good in the long run, especially if he tends to be controlling or abusive. We don't know all that, but what are the signs of domestic abuse? For, you know, somebody might have a daughter or a loved one who says, "Oh my gosh, her husband or her boyfriend is so controlling." How do you distinguish between somebody who just has a controlling personality and that line that one crosses where it becomes abusive or too controlling?
Sure, and you know, it is difficult to say, and so I'm going to share with you some of the warning signs for dating and domestic violence that are really common.
Yeah.
And I think this is really helpful for people because sometimes we don't realize that a line is being crossed, and usually it's not just one thing. Usually it's several things together. So if we look at these just really quickly, intense jealousy or being very possessive of the dating partner or of the partner. Being very moody, having a lot of changes in mood and character, being depressed, being argumentative, often checking in with the partner. So that tendency to control the person, to really want to know where they are every single moment of the day, not to have, you know, where there's no breathing space, unexplained marks on the body. So, I mean, if you're looking at your daughter or your friend or your sister and you notice that she has unexplained marks, and of course, this could also be a guy. I mean, this happens in both ways, but it's, as you said, more common with women.
Yeah.
You know, where is that coming from? I need to kind of pay attention to that. If the person is deferring to their partner's every wish, it's like they're really submissive because there's fear there. There's a fear that if I disagree, violence could erupt or arguments could erupt. Right? And of course, it's not just physical violence. It can be emotional violence, which can be just as devastating.
Yeah.
Of course, there's also sexual coercion sometimes. Often apologizing for the partner's behavior, and we see this in the case of Gabby Petito. I mean, there's a couple of different cases where she's apologizing for his out-of-control anger. Poor academic performance, especially if they're, you know, kids in school or teenagers, college students, you know, they just can't focus.
Yeah.
Isolation from friends and family. This is a big sign. If somebody starts kind of disappearing from your social circle, whether it's a married woman or whether it's a teenager or whatever it is, a young woman, you know, they're no longer available to you because this person is being isolated by their partner. Person gets visibly upset after phone calls or dates, is afraid of making their partner angry. For the perpetrator, you know, gets violent when he is angry. So he's not just angry, but he gets violent. And that might not be necessarily that he hits the person. He might hit a wall. He might injure an animal. He might throw something. And of course, women can also do these things.
Yeah.
And so we need to be aware that, you know, when somebody is showing that they're not in control of their emotional brain,
yeah,
this is a warning sign. They speak disrespectfully about their partner,
right,
you know, behind their back. They put them down or in front of their face. They brag about having total control. They get angry after phone calls. They're obsessed with their partner and what their partner is doing. You know, trying to control every aspect of their behavior, going through their computer, their phone. I mean, then we get into stalking behavior, cyber abuse. There's so many different things that can be happening.
Yeah, it's fascinating because I had a woman who called me and asked for prayer. We pray the chapel to Divine Mercy here every afternoon around 3 Central.
Great prayer.
And she called up and she was telling me about her husband, and he gets angry at everything, right? And she goes, I just please pray that I don't make him angry. You know, maybe it's my fault. I mean, she came from this vantage point, and I had to say to her, look, it's not your fault. You know, women walk on eggshells, and they feel that it's something they said or did that's going to trigger the abuse. And I don't know how it gets to that situation. It's got to be a progressive type of conditioning, almost.
Absolutely, which makes us think, I mean, if it got to where they're in Moab, Utah, arguing, and this thing happens, that wasn't the first time. It couldn't have been the first time. You know, there is a progression. And as you said, I had this written down as a note for myself. If you're in a relationship where you're afraid, if you're in a relationship where you're walking on eggshells all the time, that is not a healthy relationship. Something is going wrong and something needs to happen. And maybe you need to take the initiative because, you know, in the case of Gabby Petito, it's really tragic. I can't say what I feel for her family having lost her and the pain she, you know, they must be experiencing. But even her father said, if you're not, he said this on the news, if you're not in a good relationship, take action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you feel that something is not right in your relationship, get out now. And so, of course, you know, we don't know what was happening there. But if that's true of your relationship, it's time to take action now, because waiting for someone else to change, it might be too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we really don't know how severe things are. until they happen.
Doctor, did the police make a mistake in the Gabby Petito case? Should they have taken Brian or her, one of the two, away? Because I don't blame the officers in some respects. I'm not an officer, but you know, here these young kids are, so to speak. You know, they're traveling across the country. They got into a tiff. You're really going to arrest one of them? In retrospect, the answer is probably yes. But from the police who saw the situation, how were they to discern when Gabby, you know, was saying, "Hey, it wasn't his fault," or he, you know, it's hard to determine who really to believe. But your thoughts on the Petito case and the Moab police and the way they handled it?
Yeah, and of course, you know, I'm not in any position to judge the police officer who made that call. That was a call, and I mean, he explained it. But I do think that this can happen. Mm-hmm. I know that officers in San Diego, you know, we have a domestic violence training program for officers here in San Diego and California. And so that they are trained to recognize the signs of abuse and also to recognize the fact that there are certain types of personalities that will hoodwink you. And so, you know, you don't want to get sucked into the fact that they're going to convince you that everything's fine and that really their partner is just a very emotional woman and she's kind of out of control and everything will be okay. And I mean, it sounds as if Gabby herself said that to them as well. You know, everything's going to be fine. It's you know, don't arrest him. And so this can happen anytime. You know, I can't judge that officer. Right. Certainly in retrospect, you know, we have perfect vision. You know, we understand. But generally speaking, when there is domestic violence, somebody gets arrested here in San Diego anyway. And so, you know, honestly, I can't say. Did he make a mistake? It's not up to me to judge. Yeah. But certainly, you know, it would depend on his training and on the situation and also on how good that person is at convincing you that everything's fine. Yeah.
Let me do this. I'm going to go to Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Jacob's listening. He's a former police officer. I think he wants to comment on the story. Hi, Jacob. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. How are you guys doing?
I'm well. Thanks. Thanks for calling.
Excellent. Hey, you're very welcome. You know, I don't have all the answers, but I think it's important that we recognize that, you know, this is a sad case, and every case where anyone dies, you know, domestic violence or any other way is sad. But, you know, I think where I go with this is, you know, with the officers that handled the case, I watched the video, and I also feel like even as I have done that profession in the past, I'm not in a position to judge them. But it's not on every single case that there's domestic violence called that someone goes to jail. You know, I've been in many cases where, you know, it's very ambiguous. It's very hard to tell. And if there's no witnesses and no injuries, and it just seems like these officers thought everything was, you know, under control, and I can't blame them. I mean, officers, that's one thing I've always advocated for more of is training. And I think when I was a cop, I saw different cases handled by people who are younger that became officers that don't quite have the training or the knowledge to handle situations of such a, you might say, diverse nature, right? They just don't have the experience.
Right.
And so what I would say, I'm 40 now and I'm still learning this stuff. I was recently reading a book on Stoicism and all the connections between Christianity, you know, Catholicism and Stoicism and, and how, you know, we cannot control anything outside of our own brain. You know, even our own bodies are somewhat outside of our own control as far as what happens to us disease-wise or, you know, situations we might get into or be involved in. So I would just say that this case, you know, as unfortunate as it is, you know, the warning signs that we need to teach to women, we need to teach them in schools. Mm-hmm. We need to let people know that it's not their own behavior that is causing these other individuals, the boyfriend or the girlfriend or whoever, to act this way. If somebody is controlling, more than likely it comes from their history of the way that they were raised as a child. They had a controlling father. It's my experience. Yeah. They had somebody in their environment that was that way, and they learned that kind of behavior.
Jacob, it's such a great point. I got to hold you on that because I got to take a break. I hear my bumper rolling here. But when we come back, Doctor, maybe you can pick up on what causes this type of behavior in a man or a woman that they become abusive and controlling. Anna in Chicago, Susan in California, everyone else will grab your calls when I hear your story when I return. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the news and issues now that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining me. Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll pray the chapel. Be sure and join me and tell somebody else who's in need of prayer. We'd love to do that. If you're just getting plugged in, we're taking a look at a byproduct of the Gabby Petito story, a tragic story of a young girl who lost her life while on a road trip with her boyfriend. And it has sparked a conversation about domestic violence and abuse. We know that the Moab Police Department there in Utah were called to the scene, and Gabby was tearful, and her boyfriend, you know, made the allegations that, you know, it was she who was attacking him, and the police separated him, gave him an opportunity to cool off, and a few days later we found out that Gabby was dead, and Brian Laundrie had returned home with her vehicle and used her ATM and even bought another cell phone. So, strange case. But it does bring up, you know, important discussions. Jacob, who is a former police officer calling us from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, shared he brought up a couple of many interesting points. One of those, though, doctor, my guest today, if you're just joining us, too, is Dr. Christoria Welland, and she's an expert in this type of abuse. She's a Catholic psychologist. You know, he says, look, quite often the abuser has a history behind them. Can we talk about the abuser for a moment? Then I want to grab a couple quick calls here. What creates this type of mentality or behavior in an individual that they're this controlling, or they'll stalk, or they'll abuse, even murder?
Sure. And, you know, that's a really heavy, loaded question, and there's tons of research about that. So I can just really briefly speak about the risk factors. And, you know, part of it is our early childhood upbringing. So what kind of attachment do we have to our parents? Do we feel secure? Are we always jealous and afraid in a relationship that somebody's going to abandon us? That can be a problem for people who are excessively jealous and possessive. There's also, of course, if somebody is brought up in a family where they have a lot of antisocial modeling. So, you know, if the parents or maybe the father himself is violent or is has a very negative attitude towards women, that can also affect. There's also people who grow up in good families and become violent. And so how does that happen? And so there's so much complication. I couldn't possibly cover it just in a couple of minutes. But definitely, there are a lot of different reasons why somebody can become violent. There's long-term reasons. There's short-term reasons, like if the person is doing drugs or alcohol, that ups the ante. There's so many reasons why people do not understand that we are equal before God, that we are loved, that we need to treat each other with respect. They don't believe that, and they don't do it. And then there's people who really do not know how to regulate themselves. They don't know how to manage their anger. Yeah. They don't know how to manage their feelings of abandonment. And they can really just get out of control. Not out of control when the police officer stops you, out of control when you're with your partner. So, you know, you can have definitely two parallel personalities going on that makes it very difficult to identify people who can be violent.
You know, it's interesting too. I had a neighbor who, beautiful couple, but when this woman drank, she actually was the one who became violent, you know, and she would attack her husband. So it's not always the guy. Sometimes, I mean, she had a knife to him and all sorts of things. I mean, she was pretty violent, a little bit scary.
Absolutely. And, you know, Drew, there's a lot of evidence out there. I mean, in countries where they ask the question, they find that there's a lot of violence that goes both ways in relationships. And, you know, what typically happens is the impact of male to female violence is worse because the man has more strength.
Of course, yeah.
You know, there's a lot more murders of women than there are of men, but that doesn't mean that it's insignificant.
Yeah.
That
That's
women
for sure.
can also assault men.
Doctor, let's do this. We only have a few minutes. I want to get a couple calls. A lot of people waiting patiently to join
Absolutely.
The conversation. Susan's listening in California. Susan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thank you for being there with your guest.
You're welcome. Go right ahead, Susan.
Hi,
thanks.
Susan.
Okay, so all good now, but I was married 10 years, and the gentleman, I'm being generous, became extremely controlling and mental abuse and so forth, so extreme that I met up with a woman's shelter, got help with them coaching how to escape, basically, by surprise.
Thank God.
Once I did, he got word of an appointment by way of a reminder on the phone at that time. It was message, hey, here's your appointment at such a place, such a time. And so he rented a rental car and tracked me and cornered me at a bank, etc. So long story short, I'm okay now, but that was 2020. I want to let ladies out there and men too know that most states have a confidential address program I had to go to Utah, Nevada, California. Each of those three states has a confidential address program to help the person hide. But in this day of technology, it's been an absolute nightmare for those of us who are trying to get away and have a new life. So name change is sometimes required to just have peace of mind. But then, you see, judges and police officers can have their address sealed, but not victims of violence or abuse like I had. So I want to say, look for a CAP program in each state, ladies and gentlemen. Search for that confidential address program. That'll help a lot of people.
All right. Well said. Thank you, Susan. Doctor, I'm going to let you respond.
I appreciate that, Susan. I'd like to say that I'm really sorry what you had to go through. I know I can hardly imagine how terrifying that must be. I've worked with many women in that situation, and I've seen the terror on their face. So, you know, the idea that somebody could be tracking you is, you know, with the cyber abilities that we have right now, is just so much easier than it used to be. And so that's something you really need to be aware of. I also want to say that for, you know, those who are listening who are Catholics, we may not know what the church is teaching on domestic violence these days and how, you know, you don't have to stay in that relationship. And so I recommend that you look at the USCCB website. It's a relatively short document that came out in 2002, so it's not new. It's called When I Call for Help. And in that document, you can see it's not going to give you every possible resource, but it's going to tell you what is expected of you as a Catholic woman, as a Catholic partner, as a Catholic wife. You don't have to stay in that situation. You can become free of abuse. And so, you know, go to that site, look it up. It will really help you. And of course, you know, I hope that most domestic violence shelters know that they should never send a message that says, I'll meet you in such and such a place at such and such a time, because that's really putting somebody at risk.
All right. Anna's listening in Chicago. Anna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to make this very short. Number one, my parents, my father was my mother's first marriage, but it was his second marriage. They did not have me until he was, I believe, she was 33 and he was 38, second marriage, quite a bit of abuse, to the point that by the time my mom was 65 years of age, he broke her leg. They were married 55 years of age. And I told my mother at the time, after 55 years of marriage, which would have been 1994, I'm trying to get these dates very quickly, I told her she had a choice. She could either divorce him or I would let her be killed by him, because my father had progressed to the point where he had always been violent, he had always been controlling, and I understood that this stemmed back from past history of what he went through with his family. So, I mean, I do understand it's a historical thing. That's basically as quickly as I can tell this.
Tell you what, Anna, let me hold you on that point, because that's a horrific story. Doctor, I've got about a minute, minute and a half. Let me offer you the platform to give whatever information you want out to help somebody who may be in a situation like that. And whatever resource you think will bless them.
Right. And I'd like to honor the fact that Anna tried to help her mother, and I guess her mom was one of those people who thought everything was going to be okay or didn't want to take action. And that is, of course, deeply frustrating and scary for families when you try to help them and they don't respond. So once again, what I would like to say is the hotline.org is probably your best resource for starting to look for safety, and that is 800-799-SAFE, SAFE. And also know that the Catholic Church is not telling you you have to stay with this person till the end of your life. Abuse and violence go against the very nature of marriage, of Catholic marriage specifically. And so there's no reason why that would be a valid marriage. And there's a lot to be said in that document I mentioned when I called for help. Read it and, you know, find your peace, knowing that you can be safe and knowing that you can get help. And in this country, we have a lot of resources, and so we need to reach out for help.
Right. Well, my thanks to you, Doctor. We'll have to talk again. We'll continue to follow the Petito story, and we'll try to raise awareness. The website, and this is your resource, it might be providential that today you have tuned in to hear Dr. Welland. The hotline.org. The hotline.org. Check it out or call 1-800-799-SAFE. I'll be back.